This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 20th of February 2026. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 20th of February 2026. Your readers today are Caroline Houhan.
Hello.
Barry Baker.
Good morning.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Steve Russell. The main headlines this week are 1. Police arrest 4 over alleged fraud. 2. Council's long-term home plans blasted. And 3. A new community hub gets the royal approval. So now, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please.
Police arrest 4 over alleged fraud. Probe into independent education provider. 4 people have been arrested following an investigation of suspected fraudulent activity at an independent testing centre in Winchester. Hampshire's Police Economic Crime Unit has been conducting an investigation into suspicious activity at JFG Construction Solutions on Southgate Street, following a referral from the Construction Industry Training Board, CITB. The company provides technical and vocational secondary education. ITC's Internet test centres operate around the country to allow candidates to sit online exams for qualifications required to work within the construction industry. They are regulated by CITB. The centres operate from either Pearson test centres or private ITCs. The CITB HSE test, or an approved alternative alongside an approved trade-specific qualification, are required for a Construction Skills Certification Scheme, CSCs, card, which prove people working on UK sites have the proper training and qualifications. Officers executed 2 warrants in Winchester and Southampton on Sunday, February the 15th, after being tipped off that an independent test centre in Winchester has allegedly been accepting payment to help people fraudulently pass these tests. This is then allowing the person sitting the test to enter the industry without proper health and safety training. Following the execution of these warrants, officers made multiple seizures, including electronics and cash, and have arrested 4 men. A 47-year-old man from Southampton on suspicion of conspiracy to defraud and acquiring, using, possessing criminal property. A 25-year-old man from Birmingham on suspicion of conspiracy to defraud. A 46-year-old man from Swindon on suspicion of conspiracy to defraud. A 53-year-old man from West Bromwich on suspicion of conspiracy to defraud. They have been released on bail until May the 15th whilst inquiries continue. Detective Inspector Jamie Johnson, head of the Economic Crime Unit, said, "Helping people fraudulently pass these tests puts not only the subject themselves, but also those working around them at serious risk of harm, as they are entering building sites without proper training and understanding of how to carry out work safely. To be knowingly involved in and profiting off an operation that could, in the worst case scenario, cause serious injury or even death through malpractice is something that we take incredibly seriously. And we are working alongside the Construction Industry Training Board to ensure anyone involved in this criminal activity is brought to justice." Chris Simpson, head of CITB's standard setting body, said, "It is vital that we ensure the construction workforce is well trained and competent, and this means ensuring our testing methods are robust and everyone is completing tests to the standard expected. These arrests are part of our dedication to delivering a competent workforce and demonstrate our commitment to stamping out any kind of cheating or deception." Marcus Mills, CSCS Fraud Prevention Manager, said, We welcome these arrests as unqualified workers and those without the right health and safety training can put people at risk on site and endanger the public. CSCS has worked closely with awarding organisations CITB, HMRC, the Police Trading Standards and other regulators to verify qualifications, investigate malpractice at training centres and take action against anyone trying to deceive the industry. Alternatively, people can report matters confidentially via report it@citb.co.uk.
Council's long-term homes blasted. Opposition councillors have attacked a lack of Winchester Council commitment to building affordable homes beyond 2032. Plans to build 1,000 new homes in Winchester District up to 2032 have again been backed in a new budget. The Tory group leader Caroline Horrell told Cabinet on Thursday, February 12th, "It's hugely disappointing to see the commitment that the council made to affordable housing will stop in 2032. You should hang your heads in shame. This is not what residents or tenants want. There are hundreds on the waiting list for a new home and they will be abandoned." In response, Councillor Mark Reach, Cabinet Member for Good Homes, said, "This is not a decision to be taken lightly. Of course we need more affordable homes, but need to know where, how many, how much. New homes don't come for free, and we are not a casino council. We don't do things because they are nice. We take careful steps and make decisions accordingly." Winchester City Council has set out its Housing Revenue Account, HRA, budget and 10-year capital programme in a recent Cabinet meeting, which will support new house building and improvements to existing stock. The proposals include £162.7 million for maintenance, improvements and renewals, and a further £202.8 million for new homes over the next decade. Plans to go greener are also outlined in the plan, with continued investment in retrofitting to improve energy efficiency and support decarbonisation. The HRA budget and 30-year business plan, which supports 1,000 new affordable homes, was deemed viable and balanced by councillors as well as the scrutiny panel. Councillor Hoare agreed that the budget offered an opportunity to engage with tenants, but expressed concern for the council's long-term commitment to affordable housing. She said, "Regarding the council's commitment to enhance homes from an energy point of view, I wonder, do we have sufficient human resources available given the magnitude of this work? It's hugely disappointing to see the commitment that the council made to affordable housing will stop in 2032. You should hang your heads in shame. This is not what residents or tenants want. There are hundreds on the waiting list for a new home and they will be abandoned." From the beginning of the year, 135 interventions have been made to install solar panels and battery storage, with the council aiming to reach 120 out-of-town retrofits by the end of the year.
And here we have a new community hub gets the royal approval. A new community hub has been officially opened by the Duchess of Edinburgh. On Monday, February the 9th, HRH, the Duchess of Edinburgh, visited Brendan Care Knightwood in Chandler's Ford to launch the Knightwood Community Hub and planted a magnolia tree to mark the occasion. Michael Crutchley, Chief Executive of Brendan Care, said, "We were delighted to welcome the Duchess on such a happy occasion. We are thrilled she continues to take such a keen interest in our activities across our network of community clubs in Hampshire and our 7 care homes." During her visit, the Duchess, who is a patron of the charity, met club members, volunteers and staff and took part in a game of curling, one of the most popular activities at the hub. She also spoke with residents from Knightwood Court Care Home and the Knightwood Mews Extra Care Housing Development. Among those she met was Derek Ball, who has lived at Brendan Care Knightwood since 2006 and took part in the foundation stone laying event in 2005, which the Duchess also attended. Before leaving, Herbert Burt Smith presented Her Royal Highness with flowers and a hand-painted card created by fellow resident Judy Anderson. Mr. Crutchley, Phil Dowson, Brendan Care's chair trustees, and Daniel Parnell, Brendan Care Knightwood's general manager, accompanied the Duchess during the tree planting ceremony. The Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, and Christine Atkinson were also in attendance. The Knightwood Community Hub is Brendan Care's third in Hampshire, following the opening of hubs in Gosport and Otterbourne Hill. The space is designed to bring together residents, volunteers, club members, and the wider community for shared activities, including curling and seated exercise. Brendan Care is a Winchester-based charity focused on supporting older people through high-quality care. The organisation runs 7 care homes, 5 extra care housing developments, and nearly 40 in-person and online community clubs, along with telephone and digital support services. Brendan Care's services aim to help older people stay connected, active, and supported in later life. And this is accompanied by 2 photographs outside the Brendan Care Knightwood home with the Duchess of Edinburgh with a large digging spade in her hand, having just planted the tree, the magnolia tree, and one below with her sharing photographs with one of the residents, at least one of the residents is sharing his photographs with her, and delighted to have such a treat at this occasion.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. Right, the death notices. Alan, Joan Frances Alan, Nee Collis, passed away at home 22nd of January 26, aged 86. Frank David Brown, passed away 3rd of February 26, aged 86. Sylvia Diana Burrell, passed away peacefully at Queen Alexandra Hospital on the 20th of January 26, aged 91. Barbara Craze, passed away peacefully at home on the 2nd of February 26, aged 98. Earthy Clive David, late of Alsford, passed away on the 9th of February 26, aged 81. Joyce Edgell, died on the Friday the 30th of January 26, at the age of 89. Ellis, Bruce Edward Ellis, passed away on the 27th of January, aged 82. Lupton Shirley Ann Lupton, died peacefully on the 29th of January, aged 29th of January 2026, aged 91. Osborne, Carol Beatrice Osborne, passed away on the 3rd of February, aged 83. Rudd, J. Norman Rudd, died peacefully at home on the 31st of January 26, aged 82. Thompson, Pamela, passed away peacefully at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice, 14th of February 26, aged 83. Turner, Stella Mary Turner, passed away at home on the 5th of February 26, aged 93. Tilbury, Kathleen Mary Tilbury, passed away peacefully on the 30th of January, aged 98. And now we move on to Christian comment.
Christian comment, dethroning idols, what Lent should teach. Many Christians give something up for Lent. The tradition was give up an awful lot. That was the reason for making pancakes on Shrove Tuesday. No eggs and butter for the next 40 days. This is called a Lenten discipline, a word from the same root as disciple. If it is at heart a way to learn. But if you treat Lent as a trial of will, you will only learn that you aren't as strong-willed as you think. It's surprisingly hard to keep even a simple rule, like no biscuits or cakes. Maybe you can manage not to add that extra item to your meal deal, lunch, especially in the first week. But will you stay strong when offered a slice of your colleague's birthday cake? To learn anything useful, we need to think more deeply. This Sunday, many of us will hear a reading of the passage where Jesus experiences three temptations. Will he command stones to become bread when he is famished? Will he prove his divine power by a spectacular act like jumping from the temple roof? Will he worship his ungodly tempter in exchange for all kingdoms of the world? Jesus makes a crushing response to each temptation. Separation from God's law is a worse thing than hunger. Humans don't live by bread alone. God has an enormous saving power, but we are not to use it to prove a foolish point. And even enormous worldly power is nothing compared with our spiritual integrity. The common theme in Jesus' responses is that he wants us to distinguish icons from idols. These worldly things, such as food, status in the eyes of other people, and political power, are not necessarily bad. Indeed, they can be good if they are allowed to play their part in God's saving plan for his creation. Then they become icons. An icon is a welcome image which teaches us by reflecting God's glory and self-giving love. We need our daily bread. Indeed, Jesus teaches us to pray that we will get it. If sometimes we do the right thing, those we respect may think well of us, and we may find the strength to do it again. And it is part of God's plan that there should be human institutions and power structures. The challenge is for those who have the power, whether they use it to do some good. The problem is not the things themselves, but our attitude to them. Is a large part of our life about chasing sensory pleasures? Is a large part spent worrying about how people see us? Is a large part spent pursuing power, indeed pursuing it at all costs? If so, we may be allowing one or more worldly things to become an idol, taking the place which only God and his kingdom should have. Our Lenten discipline is teaching us to throw these things down from the thrones of our hearts and to put Jesus back there where he belongs. The Reverend Philip Crinks.
We now move on to letters to the editor.
Potholes worse. I saw the article on potholes in Hampshire County Council. I would wholeheartedly agree they're getting worse. There are more of them, and they're being left to deepen a lot more before they are even contemplated for action. There is a similar issue with road deans blocked from the surface. I have reported several times a local issue which is causing flooding as the drains are on a hill. Water is cascading downhill and over the blocked drains and flooding the foot of the hill. Notifications to HCC are either ignored or I am given a platitude along the lines of, the work will be prioritised. There is a similar issue with Eastleigh Borough Council and road cleaning, which most definitely does not happen at the frequency they claim it does. Our county is becoming an unsightly mess. From John Tideman, Rowlands Close, Valley Park, Eastleigh.
Digital ID. Digital ID is an emotive topic, as letters to your paper have shown. Yet a well-designed national digital ID system, not a card, that is not the same thing, could deliver significant public benefits and help us to catch up with more advanced countries that have had this in place for many years, such as Norway. Secure, verifiable digital identification can reduce identity fraud, financial crime, benefit abuse, and much more. It can help our public services to function more efficiently and effectively, and does not in itself pose a threat to privacy. If well designed, unless you are trying to hide something illegal, digital ID also enables better joined up public services, a significant problem in the UK. Citizens could access healthcare, tax, pensions, licensing, and council services through a single secure identity, reducing duplication and administrative errors. Data sharing, where lawful and proportionate, also becomes more accurate and efficient, improving outcomes while lowering costs. This is particularly true in the NHS and care services. It does, of course, need strong privacy protections, transparency, and user control, but the benefits in simplifying everyday life, such as opening bank accounts, signing contracts, proving age, renting property, or accessing utilities, is something we need in a digital age where, sadly, the UK is at risk of being left behind. This was from Joss Creese in Bishop's Waltham.
And Tony Stevens writes, Highway Hell. Last week I was absolutely astounded to read of the abject capitulation of the leader of Hampshire County Council, HCC, insofar as his admission that the council had basically lost control of its highway maintenance programme. The roads of Hampshire were recently rated in the amber category of a national assessment of the highway network, but we all know that was rubbish when you see and experience the absolute mess that our roads have become over the last decade. It has come from forced reductions in maintenance standards criteria to meet the financial constraints, the imposition of reduced standards work, such as the drop a bit of bitmac in a hole and stamp on it, and the prioritising of work. It also stems from a lack of direct supervision of contractors and the poor quality of their work, which has led to repeat visits to the same sites time and again, so that the residents of Hampshire are paying twice, thrice, or even quadruple for work on the same sites. Why do seemingly well-repaired sites continue to be reduced to massive holes after only a short period from a previous repair? In addition, we have the continuing issue of man-made pothole, such as the sunken manhole cover, which is never set right after road resurfacing has taken place. HCC says it's the responsibility of the utility concerned, but surely this falls to the council, since they were responsible for raising the surface of the road above the previous level. I see that some such levelling has been completed in part of Winchester of late, but when I raised the issue insofar as Springvale Road was concerned following its resurfacing a decade ago, I was informed that the engineer confirmed the utility covers were level. Much as I loathe to say it, given the taxes we already pay for our private motoring, if we need to increase our individual council tax to put Hampshire's highways right, then I would vote for that, provided the money raised was used for that specific purpose. However, we all know that politicians would do what politicians would do when they saw the availability of such funds. Use it for something else. That was from Tony Stevens, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
If a job's worth doing, do it properly. Two local councillors write to bemoan that the pothole nightmare is getting worse. Chronicle Letters, February the 12th. Whilst on page 3, the leader of Hampshire County Council claims a shortage of funds. As someone who has suffered both a burst tyre and a broken suspension due to potholes over recent years, it was disappointing to see the incompetence of a repair in Christchurch Road, Winchester. The first photo shows a pothole in mid-November outside the entrance to Christchurch. After a delay, this was eventually repaired, but a few weeks later, it is already breaking up and needs fixing again. The second photo of the same pothole was taken this week on February the 12th. The correct way to repair a pothole is to dig out the loose material and make good and compact the subbase before topping with tarmac and carefully sealing the edges to bond the new surface to the old, which stops the water and frost seeping into the joint. None of this appears to have been done, just a quick bodged infill, which is the second photo. This shows is not only sinking, not adequately compacted, but also breaking up, no attempt to seal the edges. So this repair has barely lasted 2 months. If HCC are short of funds, they should at least use the resources they have wisely, rather than wasting it on poor workmanship. I shall watch with interest to see how long HCC take to repair this again, and if they use good practice. So please, County Highways, stop wasting your time and our money. If a job's worth doing, then do it properly. Chris Higgins, Edgar Villas, Winchester.
This letter is from Diana Watts, Main Road, Coldham Common, and it's titled Save the Trees. I was one of the objectors against a tree preservation order being removed from a healthy, mature oak tree in a neighbour's garden in Coldham Common at Winchester City's Planning Committee on February the 4th, as reported by the Chronicle, February the 12th. It was a truly upsetting day to see the applicant, insurers, winning due to bullish tactics. Ultimately, it came down to money, as their chair summarised. It is incredibly sad we have to put filthy lucre before the tree, but that's the reality we live in, because Winchester City Council could potentially be sued £50,000. Threats from insurers succeeded, and Winchester City Council acquiesced. A lost opportunity to stand up in support of this tree. Unfortunately, building regulations at the time, re-foundations, permitted this housing estate to be built far too close to a row of mature oaks, TPOs being a condition of development. Consequently, the house in question now has subsidence. Insurers hope planning authorities will be risk-averse, as one councillor pointed out. She was right. A previous TPO oak with the same issue in this garden was, however, allowed to remain when half the house was underpinned. This point was raised by objectors. Many valid and important issues made to save the tree were sadly dismissed. However, although the tree should and may be priceless to some, it does in fact have a price on its head. Originally, insurers wanted three mature TPO'd oak trees removed for the same reason. This was later amended to one. If damage limitation could be taken soon, i.e. root barriers or similar building works, the remaining two healthy but vulnerable specimens could be spared from succumbing to the same fait accompli. The next time insurers seek to remove a TPO. As local authorities have their hands tied in such cases, it requires central government to release funds to fight insurers. We can then look our children, grandchildren in the eye and say we cared enough to continue to protect such trees. Danny Chambers, MP, alluded to this in his letter on February 5th, re the proposed Climate and Nature Bill. Mature trees are valuable and essential assets in fighting our current climate crisis.
And Simon Lever writes, Planning Politics. A number of potentially worthwhile city building and related projects have been delayed at the cost of thousands of pounds because of seemingly inability of the City Council to arrive at agreements within a reasonable time for the benefit of Winchester's residents and visitors, Chronicle, January the 31st. Politics would seem to delay every potential development, resulting in cancellations or delays and huge costs. As an enterprising city, Winchester deserved more. And that was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Paying to park. Recently, I visited Westquay, Southampton, and regret having done so. Why? Parking, or more correctly, how to pay for parking. The powers that be have decided in their wisdom that every driver must have a mobile phone equipped with a QR reader to pay for parking. I tried this. The QR reader worked, but the website I was then directed to, where I had to enter my car's registration number, wouldn't load because the phone was on several floors of the shopping centre. To cut a long story short, I was able to pay at the exit barrier with my credit card. I spoke to several members of staff at Westquay, all of whom said many people are complaining, and one staff member said he did not have a smartphone. I know a lot of people who, for whatever reason, would not be able to cope. The point is that this is another situation forced on the general public by those making decisions with no understanding of the real world or real people. I will not be returning to Westquay. This lack of appreciation among the general public permeates the established political elites, whether at the local or national level. Hampshire County Council, in its proposal for local government reorganisation, has recommended to the government a four unitary authority, 4UAB2, combining Test Valley, the New Forest, Southampton and Eastleigh. This flies in the face of all common sense and is against the wishes of the local people. We can only hope the government rejects Hampshire County Council's proposed unitary authority, but as usual, the general public will bear the consequences. What would happen to Southampton and Eastleigh's debt? Would it not be spread across the new unitary authority? What about the expansion of Southampton into Test Valley? Long may towns such as Romsey keep their character, but if the government accepts Hampshire County Council's proposal, 4UAB2, for reorganisation, then we can expect things to get much worse, and parking will probably be the least of our problems. That's from Claire Grange, Rydown Lane, East Wellow, Romsey.
This letter is from Cyril Carpenter, Godwin Close, Week, Winchester. EV navigation. Further to a report on the proposed dummy advertising turbine, Chronicle February 12th and 19th, may I suggest that the modern EVs have large navigation systems built in with full directions as to EV charging hubs and petrol locations throughout the UK. So why spoil the countryside with any further constructions?
Roger Stevens also writes, The Big Dummy. Plans for a 59-metre model turbine too intrusive? Chronicle February the 5th. Those guys in the northeast have the Angel of the North, so we in the south should have our own proud symbol. We could call it the Big Dummy. Not a good idea, those guys in the north might think we are referring to ourselves. A dummy wind turbine? There's dummy and wind, words that so splendidly symbolise the greening of our country. Close our last coal mine and import our coal from abroad. That's green, isn't it? Close our North Sea oil and gas wells and replace that supply by imports from abroad. Oh, that's green, isn't it? Shut down our dirty steel and aluminium factories and import our steel and aluminium from abroad. That's green, isn't it? No need to cut our fuel consumption and we can still drive our Chelsea tractors because it all comes from abroad. That's green, isn't it? Greening in the UK, it's a dummy process devised by dummies. P.S. I have chosen the word spectre because it is something unpleasant that looms over us. Perhaps the Chronicle could open a competition for readers to offer their own suggestions. And that was from Roger Stevens, Cliffway Compton.
Editorial comment. Affordable homes for beyond 2032. Winchester's much-vaunted 1,000-home programme, set to run only until 2032, has once again been waved through by councillors. But the real story here is what happens after that deadline, or rather, what doesn't. Opposition members have already criticised the council for showing no commitment to building affordable homes beyond 2032, despite reaffirming support for the 10-year housing revenue account programme. It is a worrying omission and one that speaks to a deeper failing. For all the words around the council pressing on with its ambition of delivering 1,000 homes in a decade, the fundamental truth is undeniable. Winchester still does not have enough affordable housing, and the people who need it most, young residents, key workers and lower income families, are being pushed out. The council itself recognises that the housing shortage has left thousands of young people unable to get on the property ladder, a reality felt in every part of the district. Yet the city continues to attract waves of well-off incomers. Winchester has always been desirable, but desirability without supply is a recipe for exclusion. Without a long-term commitment to building genuinely affordable homes, not just in headline numbers but in sustained policy, the city risks becoming even more homogeneous, a place where those born here cannot afford to stay and those who serve the community cannot afford to live. It would be seriously bad news if the programme is dropped. It was initially instigated by the Tories when George Beckett was leader and carried on by the Lib Dems, a fine example of a cross-party initiative. Stopping the programme in 2032 is not just an administrative gap, it is a moral one. Housing is not planned in convenient 10-year blocks. Winchester needs clarity, ambition, and a pipeline that stretches beyond political cycles. Otherwise, the district will continue its drift into becoming a haven only for the affluent, a future no responsible council should accept.
This letter came from Mike Sherwood, writes Close South Wanston, and it's headed, "Not Like in My Day." I'm nearly 80 now, and as I shuffled through the town the other day, I was struck terribly, not for the first time, by the thought that the Winchester today is not a patch on the Winchester of my childhood and youth. Back then we had Inter Alia, lots of far more interesting small shops, for example the magnificent Cadena Tea Rooms, Woolworths, two outdoor swimming pools, boats in the North Wales Recreation Ground, and the wonderful Chesil Railway Station at the bottom of the town, now replaced by a hideous car park. The pace of life was far more sedate, and things were all the better for it.
We now move on to first person.
This is titled "The One Thing We Can Thank the Rain For" by Joanna Lewis. The only positive to have come out of all this rain has been its effect on footwear. Fewer people are wearing trainers. How many of us have stepped out thinking surely there was nothing left in the sky to tip out on us? So we kept our favourite comfy footwear on. 10 minutes later, we were drenched by another downpour. Our toes went soggy and our trainers turned into a smelly, rubberised grey mush. Footwear has got interesting again, at least on the commute. Now I see people wearing boots, shoes and designer wellies, but all still low-heeled, I'm happy to report. If I spy a stiletto, it's less likely to be woman feeling she has to power dress in the office, or to elongate her legs to feel attractive. It's more a sign of a hen party in the making, or a drag queen working the concourse. This newfound joy in boots and brogues has come too late to save beloved Russell and Bromley, another lion of the high street lies slain. Personally, I'm devastated. I'd love to brag and say I shop there regularly. Alas, my academic salary never stretched that far, but certainly it became the go-to for so-called occasional wear. Window shopping to gawp at the display was an essential ritual whenever you popped into town, or a quick in and out to avoid getting entrapped by an assistant, and in a moment of weakness, coming out with orange platforms and a matching clutch. I remember the first pair of shoes I bought in the Winchester branch probably a decade ago. They were early prototypes for what became their signature wedge trainers. Gold spangly lace-up brogues with a thick white sole. Someone said unkindly, they looked orthopaedic. But I stuck by them at that price, reminding the ingrate that they were made in Italy. Even as the gold turned to a sulfuric mustard after a few years, I clung on. I still use the cloth bag they came in to wash my tights. Talking of which, a welcome shift in office dressing is also in the air. It's great to see more smart casual combos having an airing. Skirts and suits are replacing elasticated waists and tracky bottoms. Office attire is finally escaping the shadow of the pandemic dress down, when anything went online and sometimes very little on below. What you wear does affect how you behave, and in a professional space that is so important. A few months ago I conducted an experiment. I wore pyjamas into work, into central London. And no, dear reader, this is not the excuse I told the medics who came to section me outside Somerset House. I wanted to know, could you get away with so-called loungewear pyjamas, disguised with long coat, smart shoes and big earrings? Well, yes and no. The Luand pink matching wide-legged trouser and top did not raise any eyebrows from colleagues. But during meetings, I felt sloppy, less on point, unserious. So I detest all those tycoons and billionaires who schlep around giving interviews in baseball caps, T-shirts, who wear wooden beads from Zanzibar, encouraging us to relax, man. It's misleading and creepy. They want us to believe is there no power gap. We're all the same. Money doesn't matter. Like hell, look at Epstein and his pedo pals. Sadly, dressing up for work may be short-lived trend. One of the many things we wish we didn't know about the current Prime Minister is that he often fixates about the clothes worn by colleagues in Number 10 meetings, far more actually than he does about his policies and his people. One thing is certain, anything he endorses will immediately fall out of fashion. After all, thanks to him and his Zed team, we currently feel like we're going to hell in a handbag.
And now we move on to Belgarum.
Belgarum has a rather interesting alternative look at the news today. It's no cock and balls run. A woman from Hampshire is running 70 miles in the shape of a penis to raise awareness about a serious condition affecting men, writes Gabrielle de la Cruz. Elizabeth Gatherer is preparing for a run across the Black Mountains and Brecon Beacons to make the drawing on the app Strava. Titled Balls to Cancer, Tackling Prostate 1 Mile at a Time, the event was inspired by Terry Rosaman, who ran the world's largest drawing of a GPS cock and balls in 2024. His run raised more than £5,000 for the Movember charity. The ultra runner organised this run to raise money for Prostate Cancer UK, which provides support and information about prostate cancer. It will take place on February the 21st. She said, "This is not a race or a competition against anyone. I want to enjoy the beautiful route and raise awareness at the same time." Prostate cancer is the most common type of cancer in the UK for men, affecting 1 in 8. Every hour, one man dies from prostate cancer across the country. 13% of male deaths are from cancer. Ms. Gatherer hopes this challenge event encourages more men to talk about prostate cancer and its treatment. She knows many men who have been treated for the condition. And this is attached with a photograph of Elizabeth Gatherer doing a run in what was at that point the sun in her trainers. And one hopes that perhaps when she continues this run tomorrow, it will also be dry, as it's rather a muddy path.
Right, lighting up time ends on Friday the 20th at 06:40 a.m. and begins again at 1800 hours. On Wednesday the 25th of February, it ends at 06:30 a.m. and begins again at 1810. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we continue with further items of general news. Now we continue with items of general news.
Planting support for counselling group. A new youth counselling group celebrated its launch with a talk and tree planting event in Winchester. Oak Tree Counselling is a new initiative founded by Winchester Youth Counselling, which is a privately funded service aiming to help 11 to 25 year olds. Proceeds from the private sessions will go straight back into the WYC. The event took place on Friday, February the 13th at the Winchester Centre, St George's Street, and welcomes guests including the Mayor of Winchester, who spoke to members of staff to find out more about what the charity offers. There was also a celebratory tree planting, which was officiated by the Mayor, as well as cake and nibbles provided by WYC, current supporters. Belgarum, who nominated them as their charity this year. Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Ashval, said, The statistics from Winchester Youth Counselling are really impressive. Their help in providing aid to young people is heartwarming, and having an oak tree is a fantastic integration to celebrate growth. I am really glad this team are doing something so great for young people in the area. It's an integral part of the community. Harriet O'Brien, Marketing Manager of Belgarum, said, "We had around 20 applications for Charity of the Year this year, and nearly all of our staff picked Winchester Youth Counselling. A few have had personal experiences with their children, and there's not a lot of support around this area, which is why this is so important. It's a great idea." As the service continues to grow, WYC are looking to expand their office space. They are in the final stages of adding an additional counselling room, as well as a space outside the current office to provide further workshops and a place for staff as well as clients.
Big guest writers are booked in for festival. A books extravaganza is returning to Winchester this spring with an exciting list of guest writers. Winchester Books Festival will take place from April the 17th to the 19th, with additional one-off events welcoming TV actor Martin Clunes on May the 1st and local author Claire Fuller on May the 8th. The festival will feature nationally acclaimed names including Sir Tony Robinson, Mary Portis and Jeremy Wade, alongside a diverse selection of established and emerging literary voices. Festival founders Sian Searles and Sophila Day said, "Winchester Books Festival is becoming more than just a books festival. It's a space where each year books come alive and connect people from all ages and all walks of life. We're proud to offer a diverse program that truly has something for everyone, where stories can be shared and new favourite authors and books discovered. This year's program covers fiction, non-fiction, history, crime, politics and memoirs, as well as pastimes such as fishing and gardening. Headlining the festival are Sir Tony Robinson and Tristan Gooley, with a special double bill on the evening of Friday, April the 17th. Other highlights include TV presenter and retail expert Mary Portis, comedian and author Kathy Lett, and broadcaster Mark Urban. Creative sessions will include a talk from hotelier and designer Kit Kemp, as well as garden designer Joe Thompson. Music lovers can also look forward to BBC Radio 2 presenter John Suchet, who is set to speak about his passion for Beethoven, and fishing enthusiasts will hear from Marina Gibson and River Monsters presenter Jeremy Wade. Coinciding with the National Year of Reading, the festival has expanded its offering for children and families. Preschool storytime sessions will be held on Friday at the library and Saturday at the Guildhall. Interactive author talks for families will take place during the weekend, hosted by BBC Radio 1 Extra presenter Fee Mack. A family zone with activities for children of all ages will also be set up in the courtyard at the Guildhall. The launch event for the festival will take place on Wednesday, March the 4th at 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Arc. Tickets go on sale on Friday, February the 6th. To find out more information, including dates and times to catch your favourite authors, visit winchesterbooksfestival.com.
And here we have Historic Gate to be reinstalled after work. A historic gateway is being reinstated after ongoing 6 months of conservation. Winchester Cathedral's Grade 1 listed Prior's Gate, dating from the mid-17th century, was removed in August last year for essential conservation. It will be reinstalled during the closure from 8:30 a.m. on Thursday, February the 19th, until at least 5 p.m. on Friday, February the 20th, following extensive conservation work carried out by specialists at Owlsworth Conservation under the Ancient Monuments and Archaeological Areas Act. John Ryan, Director of Works at Winchester Cathedral, said, "I'd like to thank all those involved in facilitating this project, but especially the incredible skill and knowledge of the carpenter joiners who have kept a steady hand when undertaking the work. Whilst the work has been temporarily disruptive, it is satisfying to think the work we do now will allow these gates to live on. Originally believed to date from the 15th century, dendrochronology has now confirmed that the dates were built between 1620 and 1650, placing them in the period of the English Civil War. It is thought they may have replaced earlier gates destroyed during the conflict, much like the cathedral's west window, though this remains unconfirmed. And this is accompanied by a lovely photograph of the beautiful arch into the cathedral with the gates as they were, and I can confirm that, as I was unable to walk through them this morning, they have been reinstalled, the wooden gates dating back to the 15th century.
It's 100 years of amazing stories. A woman who witnessed two coronations and once saved a life has celebrated her 100th birthday. Carol Kennedy reached the milestone on Sunday, February the 8th, and celebrated with a party at Brendan Care, Otterbourne Hill. Carol's family legacy gave a front row seat to royal history. She attended the coronations of King George VI and Queen Elizabeth II, thanks to her grandfather, Sir John Simon, a prominent liberal politician. Sir John served in several senior government roles before and during the Second World War, including Home Secretary, Foreign Secretary, Chancellor of the Exchequer, and Lord Chancellor under Sir Winston Churchill. Born into a royal naval family, Carol spent part of her childhood in Chile and 2 years in Malta, where she learned to swim and dive. At the age of 10, she saved a boy from drowning in a Scottish loch. She was awarded a Royal Humane Society Award for her bravery. She also climbed Ben Nevis when she was a child. During the Second World War, Carol was evacuated to Canada for 2 years before returning to the UK in a convoy during the Battle of the Atlantic. She later returned to her childhood home in Liss and trained as a nurse at St Thomas's Hospital in London. There she met her future husband, Ken, a GP in Kent. He died of MS in 1965. The couple had three daughters, Tessa, Val and Jane. Following Jane's completion of school in 1976, Carol moved to Branbridge to be closer to her mother. She retrained as a social worker and remained in her Riverside home for 48 years. She also raised funds for the MS Society by swimming 80 lengths of the Marwell Pool when she was 80, and in 2016 published a memoir titled A Pebble in the Pond. Carol moved to Brendan Care, Otterbourne Hill, in June 2024. To mark her 100th birthday, the care home organised a party attended by 30 family members, including her three grandchildren and three great-grandchildren. Her daughter, Val Coyne, said, "One thing she has always taught us is that no matter how tough times are, some good always comes out of it." And there's a picture of Carol with the 100 years balloon behind her.
Cathedral wins award. An immersive exhibition exploring humanity's connection with the ocean has won national recognition. Wichita Cathedral's Whales exhibition has won Cultural Enterprises Award for Best Event in 2025. The winners were revealed at a ceremony at ICC Birmingham on Tuesday, February the 10th. The exhibition was designed to highlight the relationship between people, oceans and whales, transforming the cathedral into a multi-sensory underwater experience. The Reverend Canon Dr. Roland Riem, Interim Dean of Winchester Cathedral, said, "We're naturally delighted to be recognised for our Whales exhibition, which has been enjoyed by visitors to St Albans Abbey and to Rochester Cathedral this month. Whales was a huge success, seen by 20,000 people in Winchester. It is testament to the vision of the artists Tessa Campbell-Fraser and Harley Lambrianu, who composed the soundtrack. The exhibition featured sound, scent, lighting and sculptures created from ghost nets and recovered plastics."
And air lifesavers performing exceptionally, says CQC. Hampshire and Isle of Wight's air ambulance is performing exceptionally well, reporting no serious incidents in a year, according to CQC inspectors. The service, which provides air ambulance and critical care emergency response to patients across the counties, was rated outstanding by the watchdog in its first report after a visit in October. Inspectors found people were receiving high-quality, person-centred care, with safety described as everyone's top priority. The report highlighted an exceptional culture of learning and safety, with every incident actively reviewed. There were no serious incidents reported in the previous year. Patient and family feedback was overwhelmingly positive, with many describing the care as gold standard. One family noted the exceptional kindness of the staff, crediting them for saving lives and offering vital support through a dedicated aftercare team. This team helps patients and their families process their experiences and ensures they are fully informed after receiving treatment. Staff engagement during the inspection revealed a commitment to safety protocols and effective teamwork. Every incident was reported, reviewed, and acted upon to improve care quality. The CQC report noted that the service had introduced changes such as training paramedics in invasive blood pressure monitoring to enhance patient outcomes. Inspectors also commended the service's staff for being highly skilled and ensuring that safety was always a priority. Leaders implemented clear practices surrounding care protocols, enabling the service to maintain high standards in providing rapid responses in urgent situations. Additionally, the air ambulance works in collaboration with other emergency services to ensure seamless patient care. The charity was also praised for reviewing 999 calls to determine where the highest rate of calls came from, to position its rapid response team in that area, leading to faster response times. And this is accompanied by the iconic image of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight air ambulance helicopter, which is bright yellow and green, very different from many of the others.
Flytipper fined for dumping grass cuttings. Winchester City Council has achieved another successful fly-tipping conviction, this time with the help of a passerby. Samuel James Rickard, 51, of Elder Close Badger Farm, was seen by a passing motorist dumping green waste and hedge cuttings from a van onto private land in Port Lane, Haresley, in December 2024. The motorist passed the van's registration number to the City Council and followed up with a full statement. The council's team investigated and prosecuted the case, and the green waste was revealed to be commercial waste from Rickard's gardening business. Rickard pleaded guilty at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on Friday, February 6. He was fined £677 and ordered to pay a victim surcharge of £271. Prosecution costs of £1,523 and clear-up costs of £180, making a total to pay of £2,651. Councillor Steve Cremeshan, Council Cabinet Member for Recycling and Public Protection, said, "At Winchester City Council, we do not tolerate fly-tipping. We're committed to protecting our local communities, wildlife and environment. The crime of fly tipping causes huge damage, so wherever possible and appropriate, we will look to take legal action."
Silent disco making a noise for a good cause. A silent disco is being held to raise money for Alzheimer's UK. The event at the Winchester Club in Highfield Lodge, Worthy Lane, on Saturday, February the 28th, will include a DJ war between six DJs, all vying for visitors' attention. With just 100 tickets available, the organisers are encouraging people to grab theirs before they sell out. Priced at £15 plus a booking fee, each ticket purchase not only grants access to the fun-filled night, but also contributes to the fundraiser. Emma McCaffrey, founder of Move with Emma and event host, described the Winchester Club as a proper little gym. With e-tickets required for entry and silent disco headphones included, Organisers promise an evening to remember. The silent disco will kick off at 7:30pm and is expected to last for 3 hours. A spokesman added, "Get ready for your night of fun and know you've donated to the right cause. Ready to let your hair down and shake off your winter blues with some movement and music for a good cause? We are bringing back our silent disco DJ war, and this time it's bigger and better."
And three adorable new monkeys at the zoo. Marwell Zoo is celebrating the birth of three new arrivals, all born on the same night. A pair of twin cotton-headed tamarins and a coppery titi monkey were welcomed by keepers on the same evening. The births came just in time for Valentine's Day, in what staff described as a huge surprise. Amy Denny, the animal team leader for primates and small mammals at Marwell, said, "It was a huge surprise and very unusual to find two different groups had given birth on the same night, but a complete coincidence. We discovered the cotton-headed tamarins first, which wasn't too unexpected, given we were anticipating it for a little while. But when the keeper moved on through life among the trees to discover a titi baby that we had no idea about, we were pretty speechless." The critically endangered cotton-headed tamarin twins bring their troop at Marwell to a total of 9. Parents, Gert and Miko, have now welcomed their fourth set of offspring, all of whom are named after characters from the Addams Family: Pugsley, Pubert, Fester, Lurch and Sloom. Miss Denny said, "Oh, we've had a string of success with cotton-headed tamarin births in the past couple of years. They have successfully bred every year since they were introduced to each other, so they're just a very compatible pair. Fewer than 2,000 of the species are thought to remain in the wild. The coppery titi monkey infant is the second for parents Taco and Mr. Titi. Their first, Nacho, was born in January last year. The zoo follows a hands-off approach, allowing the parents to raise their young with minimal interference. Marwell is running its Wild at Heart week of activities." And this has a lovely photo of the two little twin cotton-headed tamarins with very little grey faces, but very white cotton hair and arms, sitting close to each other on the branch of a tree, looking at the camera.
Objections to fake turbine. Almost 100 objections have been filed against plans to build an advertising turbine at Three Maids Hill. 93 objections have been submitted to Winchester City Council regarding the non-function turbine, which would advertise the InstaVolt charging hub. Reasons for the objections include fears that the sign would be distracting and intrusive, to worries that it would cause harm to the character of the landscape. Nita Adams of Stavedown Road, South Wanston, objected to the plans, calling the sign a complete blot on the landscape, which would serve no purpose whatsoever. In her written objection to Winchester City Council, she said, "If more advertising is required for the electricity hub, then surely the cheapest and most effective solution would be to place more road signs on the A34, advertising its whereabouts and any other roads deemed necessary." Jonathan Watts of Old Stable Mews Littleton said that the sign could be misleading to motorists, saying, "The installation of a model wind turbine would give the false impression that it is generating renewable energy for the charging hub, when in reality it serves no functional purpose beyond advertising." He added that the proposed height of the turbine, 59 metres tall, taller than Winchester Cathedral, is excessive and visually harmful. Alison Ball of Valley Road Littleton warned that approving the plan would set a dangerous precedent. She said, "The proposed structure is essentially a promotional device with no functional energy generation. Its height and location adjacent to the A34 would cause disproportionate visual intrusion and landscape harm with no demonstrable public benefit. Planning and advertisement policy exists to control large prominent advertising structures. This proposal seeks to circumvent those controls by presenting an advertisement as infrastructure. Approval would set a dangerous precedent and harm the character of the area." Jeremy Tyrrell of Milverton Road, Fulford, said, "A fake wind turbine is a completely ludicrous proposal and makes no sense at all. What message is the applicant trying to convey with this? They generate renewable energy, presumably through the adjacent large solar array, not via wind power. I just don't get it."
Leisure centre future remains up in the air. A second round of public consultation has ended for the future of the Old River Park Leisure Centre. The deadline was midnight on Sunday, February the 15th, for people's thoughts on the 12 proposals for the site in Gordon Road. The council is awaiting firm proposals from the 12 bidders, whose ideas range from a LIDAR to nursery and museum. Fully costed proposals will be evaluated in April and May. There will be a third round of consultations before the City Council makes a decision in June. The centre has been redundant since June 2021, shortly before the new sports centre opened at Bar End. The development only affects the RPLC site and not the open space skate park or the bowls club. Local City Councillor John Tibbet Cooper said on social media, "The council is not in a financial position to redevelop the site itself and so needs investment from the market to turn the old leisure centre building into something new. This isn't about deciding how to spend a large amount of taxpayers' money in the future. It's about making sure a public site is developed in partnership with a third-party investor in a way that benefits the public and offers good value for money. The council is required by law to obtain best consideration for the taxpayer, but Winchester City Council doesn't have to accept the highest bid in financial terms if it can show there's social, environmental, economic benefits that can be financially quantified." Among the public responses has been from the Friends of River Park. In a statement, it said the consultation had little value and premature. Given the wide spectrum of the expressions of interest and the lack of any analysis of proposals by candidates as to suitability for this particular site, with its complexities both legal and environmental, or any assurance as to viability, funding, feasibility, etc., we cannot see that the consultation has achieved any purpose at all. The marketing exercise is premature in any event, as the draft local plan has not yet been approved. And paramount among the concerns about the site must be the flood risk. The site is on a floodplain. The water table is less than 1 metre below the surface. It is surrounded on three sides by tributaries from the River Itchen and is immediately adjacent to the confluence of those tributaries before they plunge down into the city. The City Council has been asked for more details about the public response.
And Parkinson's UK announces new Nordic walking choice. Parkinson's UK has announced two new partnerships to expand Nordic walking opportunities. The collaborations with British Nordic Walking and Walks, that's WALX, aim to improve access to Parkinson's-friendly Nordic walking sessions across the UK by training more instructors in the specialised delivery of the activity. Jed Parsons, Physical Activity Partnerships Manager at Parkinson's UK, said, "These partnerships are a fantastic step forward in helping more people with Parkinson's live well and stay active in their communities. By teaming up with the British Nordic Walking and Walks, we're opening the door to free, high-quality training for people who are passionate about the outdoors and walking. The instructor training is open to anyone with a background in physical activity, well-being, or a passion for outdoors, and is offered free of charge. It covers the core techniques of Nordic walking and provides a deeper understanding of Parkinson's as a condition. Nordic walking can benefit people with Parkinson's by improving balance, strength, coordination, cardiovascular health, and overall well-being. Expressions of interest are open until Sunday, March the 1st. And you can register for this by going to Google. And if you Google Nordic walking and walks with an X, then they will come up with an option to register.
County Council could hike council tax by 15%. Hampshire County Council could effectively go bankrupt in a bid to deal with a £101.9 million budget deficit. It's one of two options it is considering, the other being a huge council tax increase of almost 15%. In light of the deficit the Conservative-run administration is facing in the current financial year, its Chief Financial Officer, CFO, Andrew Lowe, will present the plans to the Cabinet. The first option proposes a 14.99% increase in council tax for 2026-27, which would require approval from residents via a referendum on May the 7th. In his report, Mr. Lowe said this option would allow the council to set a balanced budget supported by taking £13.3 million from its reserves. The second option, less attractive in its long-term implications, would see council tax rise by 4.99%, the maximum permitted without triggering a referendum under current rules for 2026-27. However, this approach would require a £101.9 million draw from reserves to balance the 2026-27 budget and would leave insufficient funds to set a balanced budget the following year, putting the council in a position where it may have to issue a Section 114 notice. He added, "On the balance of probabilities, without additional government support, the CFO would have no choice but to issue a Section 114 notice in advance of agreeing the 2027-28 budget. In December, the County Council requested exceptional financial support from the government in the form of council tax flexibility, which would have allowed it to raise council tax above the referendum threshold without holding a public vote. However, in a letter dated February the 9th to the leader of the council, Councillor Nick Adams-King, the government declined the request. While acknowledging the decision would be disappointing, ministers wrote, "We have sought to strike a balance between supporting council's financial recovery and limiting the impact on taxpayers, and we have not agreed to all requests." Addressing the proposals, Councillor Adams-King said, "We must be honest. With the second lowest council tax precept of any county in England, council tax in Hampshire will have to rise. Cabinet members will meet on February the 18th to choose which of the two options to recommend to full council on February the 26th.
It is time at the bar at the Hinton Arms. The Hampshire Country Pub has thanked its staff and customers as it closed its doors for the last time. The Hinton Arms in New Cheriton shut on Sunday, February the 15th. This was after pub landlords Lee and Fiona Mattia announced they wished to move on. A post on the Hinton Arms Facebook page thanked staff and customers for their support. The post said, "Over and out from the Hinton Arms, we'd like to thank all of our customers for your support over the years. We will miss you all. To all of our staff that have gone above and beyond, it had not gone unappreciated. It's been a blast." As previously reported, Lee and Fiona took over the pub in 2023 after former landlord Roger Mattia died. Mr. Mattia had run the pub alongside his wife Anne Mattia for more than 20 years. The Hinton Arms is not only known for its lunch offering and family legacy, but also its annual car show, which was set up by Roger around 15 years ago and has grown every year. The pub on the busy A272 is currently being advertised by Christie & Co for £50,000 per annum. A spokesperson from Christie & Co said the Hinton Arms was brought to market on Monday, January the 19th, with a new free-of-tie lease available. There has been good initial interest so far, and we hope to reach a sale quickly. The pub is closing its doors on February 15th and will be available with vacant possession.
Conservation volunteers. Young people will take part in a hedgerow planting event. More than 60 volunteers, aged 18 to 30, are expected to join the Hedgentine's Day project across three counties on Saturday, February the 21st, including around 25 in Hampshire. The event will see participants plant more than 600 metres of new hedgerow as part of a collaboration between Young Wilders, the Campaign to Protect Rural England, CPRE Hampshire, and the Conservation Volunteers. It forms part of CPRE's Hedgerow Heroes initiative, which is now in its fifth year and aims to restore 27 miles of hedgerow across the country. Jack Durant, co-director of Young Wilders, said, "There are few higher leverage actions for restoring nature in the UK than planting hedgerows. Hedges are biodiversity banks. They provide crucial landscape connectivity and they're an agricultural asset. They're also a deep part of our cultural heritage. We now see the impact of their removal. All that's left is to bring them back." As part of the project, Young Wilders will cover travel costs and arrange carpooling from train stations to reduce barriers to participation. The newly planted hedgerows will contribute to efforts to combat climate change, prevent soil erosion, and improve local biodiversity.
Nursery launches new charity partnership. A nursery has launched a new partnership to support its neighbouring hospital and give back to the community. Topps Day Nurseries Winchester, based at the University of Winchester and next to Royal Hampshire County Hospital, has teamed up with Hampshire Hospitals Charity to raise funds this year. The charity supports the RHCH and other hospitals in the area by funding equipment, facilities and projects not covered by standard NHS funding. Nursery manager Kayleigh Moss said, "We're really excited to be supporting Hampshire Hospitals Charity here at Topps Winchester. As part of the hospital's community, our children, families and colleagues feel a strong connection to the people who use and work in the hospital, so it's really important to us that we play our part in giving back. Through our fundraising and community activities this year, we hope to make a positive difference for local patients and their families." Throughout the year, children, families and colleagues at Topps Day Nurseries Winchester will take part in a range of fundraising activities, from sponsored events and dress-up days to collections at nursery open days and community events. Funds raised will go towards projects that improve patient comfort, create child-friendly spaces and support staff well-being. The nursery also sees the partnership as an opportunity for children to learn about helping others through age-appropriate fundraising activities. By supporting the charity, staff hope to raise awareness among families about the value of backing local NHS services. Sabrina Marsden, fundraising manager at Hampshire Hospitals Charity, said, "We're absolutely delighted to be working with Topps Day Nurseries in Winchester on their fundraising throughout 2026. Local support like this means so much to us. It's only through the dedicated support of our community that we're able to fund projects that make a real difference to those who use our hospitals. With the help of Topps Day Nurseries, we'll be able to do even more."
5,000 pothole moans to council in 1 week. Hampshire County Council is battling a significant surge in pothole complaints, with more than 5,000 reports in a single week and an admission that some damaged roads will only receive temporary repairs as crews struggle to keep up with demand. The authority says extremely wet and freezing weather in recent months has weakened road services across Hampshire, triggering a sharp rise in reported defects. In the last week of January alone, more than 5,000 inquiries about potholes and other road issues were logged, a 67% increase on the same week last year, according to the council. A spokesman for HCC insisted road maintenance continues to be a top priority and that every report is assessed by the highways team, with urgent safety risks prioritised. Extra resources have been allocated across Hampshire, including more repair teams and additional equipment in an effort to tackle what the council describes as a spike in demand. However, officials concede that the sheer volume of complaints means not every pothole will receive a long-lasting repair struggle straight away. While permanent first-time repairs are always our preferred approach, the sheer level of demand means some potholes may need a temporary fix, while more durable solutions are scheduled at a later date, if needed, the spokesman said. The council argues that the figures show the scale of the challenge and the effort already underway. It says that so far this financial year, it has repaired in excess of 67,000 highway defects, including potholes, and has invested £55.9 million in maintaining Hampshire's road network over the same period. Residents who report issues are told that each case is logged and assessed, with the most dangerous defects dealt with first. In the case at the centre of the latest complaint, the council says that, based on the location details provided, we understand a repair has been completed. The full statement from the Hampshire County Council spokesperson reads, "We are seeing a significant surge in reported road issues, including potholes, following extremely wet and freezing weather conditions in recent months, which has weakened road surfaces. The last week of January alone, more than 5,000 inquiries were received, a 67% increase compared with the same week last year. We are fixing as many potholes as possible. Every report is assessed by our highways team, with urgent safety risks prioritised. To help tackle the current spike in demand, we have allocated extra resources across Hampshire, including..." Sorry, that's it, finishes there.
And here we have scouts readying for Polish Jamboree. Scouts are preparing to take part in a global gathering of adventure and culture. Young people from Hampshire and the Isle of Wight met in Cowes on Saturday, February the 7th, for their first training session as members of UK Unit 40, one of the teams heading to the 27th World Scout Jamboree in Gdańsk, Poland. The Jamboree, taking place from July the 27th to August the 6th, will bring together 40,000 scouts from nearly every country to share experiences and build lasting friendships. Andy, the volunteer leader of Unit 40, said, "It was fantastic to get all of the unit together for the first time, and we worked on getting to know each other, teamwork skills, and made a start at creating of a unit identity. We're now looking forward to April for our first training camp at Ferny Crofts in the New Forest. Scouts between the ages of 12 and 16 have been selected from across the UK and must be at least 14 by the time the Jamboree begins." And this is accompanied by a delightful photograph of about 35, boy and girl, of course, now scouts in their brown and blue tops, all looking very happy about what they're challenging, with a big white and red scarf, a banner that they're holding outside the Cowes St Mary's Sea Scout group.
Parents take safety battle to council. Parents from Kingsworthy will be aiming to make their voices heard by the county council on planned school bus cuts that they say will cause danger. Dozens of parents will be outside Hampshire County Council's offices in Winchester on Thursday, February the 26th. This comes after HCC confirmed that it would be scrapping the bus route that takes Kingsworthy pupils to the Henry Beaufort School in Prior's Dean Road, Hairstock, with the service coming to an end on April the 13th. Instead, children would travel on an alternative walking route between the village and the school, which would involve crossing the junction of Springvale Road and Down Farm Lane and walking on several unmade roads. Louise McCarthy of Loveden Lane, whose 12-year-old daughter attends the school, said that the parents want to show the council that we do not agree with their decision. She said, "We do not believe that the route is safe for our children to walk." Mrs. McCarthy said that she feels very grateful to those who have supported the parents. She said Councillor Jackie Porter, the Lib Dem ward councillor for Itchen Valley, has been very supportive. "Walking those 3 miles to school and back is not safe. It is really dangerous. It is not just safe for our, it is just not safe for our children. Going to school, the weather has been terrible this winter and the school doesn't have the space for a lot of wet weather gear. When we walked the route in December, everyone was soaked.
Calls for new road safety features following a fatality. A father has voiced his concerns over the safety of a road near his house following a recent fatality. Andrew Greenwood, 44, of Stockers Avenue Takedown, said that drivers rushed through a pedestrian crossing on Stockbridge Road Week, making it unsafe for pedestrians. He said, "People are always rushing through them. Before the fatality happened on January the 13th, I wrote to the MP, Danny Chambers, in August saying that it is a real problem. He said that he wrote to Hampshire County Council and the Department of Transport. I followed it up the other day and he said he had not heard back from the council." As previously reported, a Winchester woman, Alison Spall, 73, also of Stockers Avenue, died after being struck by a car on Stockbridge Road. Mr. Greenwood, who is the managing director of LEDflex, a lighting business in Winchester, said, "That really brought it home, how dangerous it is." He continued, "You would hope the fatality would make things safer, but I feel that unless we give Hampshire County Council a push, nothing will happen about it. It is whatever budgets are more important. I think the fact that there was a fatality there should make it more important. There just needs to be something there to check speeds or some better lighting. It is a major road in Winchester and it is a road in the centre of a massive residential area. A lot of young children cross the road to get to school and there is no crossing provision. There are more people crossing that road every day and it feels more like an A road." Mr. Greenwood said he was also worried that traffic would increase when Andover Road is closed, saying, "I feel like when they do that, it will push more traffic onto Stockbridge Road. So I think the situation is only going to get worse before it gets better."
Horrendous flooding dampened pub spirits. A giant hole in the road and water coming through the floorboards has left a Hampshire Village pub despairing over horrendous flooding. Durley has faced issues with flooding for years, but the recent record rainfall has exacerbated problems for the pub and the village. Last week, the hole, which is approximately 3 feet wide, appeared on Heathen Street outside the Farmer's Home pub in Durley. The road has remained closed, cutting off a vital way to the pub and the village, and residents have been left in the dark as to when it will be fixed. Sean Angel, a resident chef at the Farmer's Home pub, said, "It has just got worse and worse. It's just horrendous. The sewers and pipes bubble up in the middle of the road. We've only just got the carpet dry now after 2 weeks of using an industrial cleaner." The staff said Southern Water tankers had been on the street day and night for about 3 years, using the nearby pump station to manage the drainage issues. They believe the constant presence of these large vehicles is damaging the road quality and creating more problems with the road without giving a permanent solution. He said the pub has been forced to spend a small fortune on 10 pumps and a supply of sandbags to manage the water, and have even installed portaloos in the car park in case their toilets become blocked again. A spokesman for Southern Water said, "We're sorry for any disruption works on Heathen Street Durley may be causing. We're investigating a potential broken sewer and our teams are digging down to identify any problems and make repairs." Southern Water attended the site on Saturday, February the 14th, and the spokesman said they were asked to investigate by the council and believe one of their sewers may be broken, and Hampshire County Council have been reached out for comment. And this is accompanied by a picture of the beautiful little old pub, the Farmer's Home in Durley, but with the road coming towards it blocked with no entrance.
Motoring on a vehicle apprenticeship scheme. More than 50 young people are training to become vehicle technicians through an expanding apprenticeship scheme. The programme, run by Winchester-based automotive services company Pro Tyre Auto Care, aims to prepare the next generation of vehicle technicians. Based at the company's headquarters in Mitchell-Dever, the scheme has recruited 54 apprentices since autumn 2023, including a record intake of 30 in 2025. Apprentices work 4 days a week in a Pro Tyre Auto Care garage, gaining hands-on experience, and spend 1 day at college working towards a Level 2 or Level 3 apprenticeship. Jake Licorice, apprenticeship lead and technical trainer at Pro Tyre Auto Care, said, "Our apprenticeship scheme is growing year on year and is a great way for us to recruit young talent. We have an aging workforce nationally and a real need to promote employment opportunities for young people. This scheme gives our apprentices the chance to learn from the best and to forge a career for themselves in the automotive industry. The feedback from the colleges we've worked with has been really good. They're all enjoying being part of the scheme and working with us, and they have commented on our superior support for our apprentices. We don't just employ an apprentice, leave them in a centre and hope for the best. We ensure they are fully supported, both personally and professionally, for the entirety of the apprenticeship. Once qualified, apprentices can progress into roles such as MOT testers, master technicians, or other specialist positions within the company. Pro Tyre also offers management training. Apprentices receive additional support, including funding for their driving test and a fully equipped toolbox valued at £1,000 after passing their probation. Pro Tyre works with colleges to identify promising candidates and offers a 2-day work trial at a nearby branch."
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, and to copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
Carolyn Hume.
Goodbye.
Barry Baker.
Goodbye.
And from me, Steve Russell, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you have finished this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.